Good morning. It's 8:06 on this Monday, May 18th. I'm Grace Dorfler, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the Local News Hour this morning. It is a snowy morning across the Wasatch Back, currently 30 degrees in Park City, with a freeze warning in effect until 9 o'clock this morning. There's another freeze warning overnight tonight. In the Heber Valley, a little bit warmer, currently 39 degrees, although a freeze warning is in effect there as well. With details about the weather forecast is ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back on this Monday. As we go throughout today, yeah, we're dealing with winter conditions out there to kick off things, with valley rain and mountain snow moving through the Wasatch Back. In fact, many areas seeing some snowflakes this morning with some accumulations even along the I-80 corridor. So again, be careful as you're traveling through the first half of the day. We'll see this rain and snow tapering off as we get towards lunchtime and into the early afternoon hours, but still watch out for some slick conditions out there. Temperatures are going to be way below average as we go throughout today, with highs only in the low 40s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs try to climb back into the low 50s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Tuesday, we'll still have plenty of sunshine returning to the area, but it's going to remain on the chilly side. Temperatures still below average, with highs only in the low 50s in Park City. We'll see those highs only in the upper 50s in the Heber Valley. By Wednesday, we start to see some changes. As high pressure begins to build back into the area, we're going to have lots of sunshine, but we're going to start to boost those temperatures up again. So high temperatures return to the low 60s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 60s in the Heber Valley. Once we make our way into your Thursday, look for a mixture of sun and clouds. A weak disturbance will try to drop in from the north. It's not going to have a ton of moisture with it, but it could produce a couple of isolated showers across the area as we go throughout your Thursday afternoon. Still, I think most of us will enjoy partly cloudy skies. Temperatures will be in the low 60s for highs in Park City. We'll see those highs jumping into the low 70s in the Heber Valley. Once that system moves out of here, oh, we are off to the races to a big warm-up just in time for your Memorial Day weekend. I've got partly cloudy skies for your Friday, highs in the mid to upper 60s in Park City, highs in the low 70s in the Heber Valley. We'll be in the low 70s for highs in Park City by next Saturday. We'll see those highs in the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. And for your Sunday, look for lots of sunshine, mid 70s in Park City with highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Taking a look at the traffic, this morning's snow is causing some problems on the road. There are a few crashes that drivers out there should be aware of. Looks like they are all, well, almost all in Summit County. If you are driving on I-80, please be mindful there is a crash on westbound I-80 that's going towards Salt Lake City at milepost 142 near Jeremy Ranch. The left shoulder is blocked. Also on I-80, oops, it looks like that crash cleared up. There was previously a crash near the Kimball Junction exit. It looks like people are back on their way. There is a crash slowing things down considerably on US 40 headed towards Park City. That's at milepost 7 near the East Village area. The right shoulder is blocked, and it appears that there are some delays in that area. So if you're driving northbound on US 40 from the Heber to Park City direction, please be mindful of that crash. As always, when there's snow, slow down on your commute, leave more following distance, and just be careful out there. And for any listeners tuning in through our app or website or smart speakers, there is some static affecting our streaming signal. We are aware of the problem and working to resolve the issue. A quick preview of this morning's show. We have a full hour of news ahead. First, we will be hearing from the Park City Fire District about fire prevention and the wood chipping program, which is one of the ways that homeowners can mitigate their risk this summer. After that, the Park City Troublemakers will be in the studio. They will share some details about their upcoming a cappella concerts here in town. Then the Youth Sports Alliance shares some updates on their programs as we wrap up another school year full of sports accomplishments. And to close out the hour, Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher will be in the studio with an update on swimming pool construction and other big community construction projects happening around town. That's all coming up on the Local News Hour. Homeowners neighboring Utah Olympic Park want a state court to block the park's new development agreement with Summit County. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports they argue it doesn't benefit the community.
the Summit County Council approved a new development agreement with the Utah Olympic Park in April after months of pushback from neighbors. Now the Sun Peak Homeowners Association hopes 3rd District Judge Richard Mrazek will block it and send it back to the council for a new deal. The agreement facilitates the UOP's planned 120-room hotel and extra housing for athletes, coaches, and employees. Sun Peak's complaint filed May 14th says the additions are not public benefits as required by the Snyderville Basin General Plan. HOA President Meta Haley says development agreements are partnerships between a landowner and the community.
Obviously, the developer gets the benefit of whatever commercial or residential growth they're facilitating. And in exchange for that, the community is supposed to receive public benefits that otherwise wouldn't materialize.
Policy 2.3 in the Snyderville Basin General Plan directs Summit County not to approve new developments until all existing ones have been built, unless there's a, quote, compelling countervailing public interest. It's a short and significant part of the general plan, and planners are debating whether to change it or to do away with it. Summit County is midway through revising its east side and west side general plans. Utah law says general plans are non-binding unless otherwise noted in local law. The Snyderville Basin Development Code states, quote, applications for development approval shall be consistent with the general plan. Among the HOA's other allegations, it says there's no evidence that a hotel and housing will increase the tax base as required in county code.
If a development introduces more costs, infrastructure and service costs, than it contributes in tax revenue, that deficit falls onto the shoulders of the local taxpayers.
Sun Peak homeowners want the court to find that the council either violated its own policies or did not act on sound evidence. Summit County hasn't responded in court, and no hearings have been set in the case. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, joining me in the studio are Park City Fire District Marshal Mike Owens and Assistant Chief Ashley Lewis. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thank you guys so much for being here. I would love to start with the wood chipping program. It's underway, it sounds like. Could you tell me a little bit about how the wood chipping program helps mitigate some of the fire risk that we're heading into this summer?
Absolutely. Our chipping program is in full swing. We've done over 100 piles so far, so We're well on track to at least meet what we did last year and maybe do a little bit more. The response from the public is amazing. We have many, many piles registered. So good job to everyone out there. And, you know, we'll keep chipping as long as they keep putting out piles. But the general principle here is that when you have a small space that belongs to you, you kind of look at it and you think there's not a lot that I can do for wildfire fuel mitigation is really what we're working on here. And in the big picture, that's not quite true. If you do a little bit and I do a little bit and Chief Lewis does a little bit, then we've all done a little bit more. And just if we each take care of our own space, then the cumulative effect of that is pretty large. The wood chipping program is great because it allows homeowners to do that, you know, just that little inconvenient amount of work that makes a big difference when you combine it all together.
Nice. Is it too late for people to sign up?
Oh, absolutely not. We'll be running this program through the end of September. As people do work on their property, they can register 1, 2, 3, as many times as they want throughout the summer. Just go to our website, www.pcfdut.gov. There's a button right on there that you can push. It'll take you right to our chipping sign-up page and sign up and get your wood hauled away. And that's really the big part, is we're able to take those wood chips away. We're not going to leave them there on your lawn. We'll take them and dispose of them for you.
A full service operation.
That's right.
Excellent. What does it cost?
Absolutely free. Not a dime.
Excellent.
Yep. This is a program that it benefits the fire district. It benefits the community. It's one of those unicorns where we get more out of it than we put in. So we like to keep it free.
Nice. And do your teams work just within Park City limits, or do you extend out into Summit County as well?
We cover the whole Park City Fire Service District. So that does include Park City Municipal. It includes the Snyderville Basin, up into Summit Park, and up into the Preserve area.
Okay, so you're very kindly hauling the wood chips away. What can homeowners do to make it easier on you guys when you arrive?
There are some rules that they have to follow for that wood chipping program. And on our website, there's a list of those rules. For example, we can't have someone who's asking us to clear their whole property of, you know, they've gone out and they've they've cleared their property for construction, and then they need us to get rid of everything. We do limit the size of the piles. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that if you have more wood that needs to be chipped than one pile can handle, that we can't do that. Mm-hmm. We're happy to come back multiple times, but we do need to give everyone an even crack at the program. So we limit the size of the pile. We limit the way that the pile is built. Of course, our chippers are out there by hand pulling these piles apart. So if someone makes a pile using a machine, it gets almost impossible. We ask that the butts of the wood be stacked in the same direction so they can pull up to your pile, chip it, and then move on to the next one pretty quick.
Good to know. And people, I'm sure, can find all the details online.
All of it's right there on our website. Just go to that chipping page and it'll give you, there's a whole bunch of questions that you'll have answered right there. And if there's still questions, then people can always send an email to chipping@pcfd.org and we'll get those questions answered.
Very nice. Yeah. You're also out in the community doing home assessments. What does that include?
We are. Several years ago, we identified a need. It's very easy to just say, harden your home. That's the term we like to use, harden your home against a wildfire. Unfortunately, we don't know what that means. There are a lot of resources online, but it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose. You just get blasted with all this information and you're not sure where to start. So what we can do is, we work with Park City Municipal on this. The Park City Building Department has a program that's almost exactly like ours. We will come to your home, we'll walk around your house with you, and we will identify things that you can do to your home exactly to prepare for a wildfire. We will help you prioritize those, you know, looking at the cost and the benefit. And at the end, what you walk away with is something that's specific to your house to help you prepare for a wildfire, so that if something does happen here in town, there's a greater chance of your home surviving.
What are some of the most common tips that you give to property owners in this area?
You know, the biggest one is actually maintenance. Mm-hmm. It's nice to be able to have a checklist to say, oh, we've done all this, we're good, we don't need to do anything else, but it's the maintenance that really gets us. Anyone who has a deck, they know that stuff starts to accumulate under that deck. It's dry, you know, leaves will blow under there, branches or, you know, bushes will die and things will get pushed underneath. That's a rough spot for wildfires to start. So clear out under your deck, clear out the dead and dying bushes right around your house, clean the stuff off your roof. Those are the big things that really make a difference. And it's something that if you spend maybe an hour on a weekend, you can get most of it taken care of.
Yeah. Now, with the snow that we're having right now, people might not be thinking as much about fires, but I know some fire restrictions are already in place. Could you remind listeners of what the rules are right now?
Absolutely. And the irony of the snow is not lost on me here.
So. Yeah.
So within Park City Municipal, you must have a permit to have any type of fire or even use things that are going to start a fire. Mm-hmm. For example, sparklers. If you're going to have sparklers, you have to have a permit for those sparklers. Those can be obtained through the Park City Building Department. It's easy to do. You just have to follow a set of rules. They want to make sure that where you are having your fire is safe. If it's a solid fuel fire, like if it's a wood fire, has a little bit different rules than if it's a propane fire. Mm-hmm. But they're happy to work with you on that. Throughout the rest of Summit County, ordinances are still going into place as we're getting those prepared. There's some legal loopholes we have to jump through. The way the state handles wildfire restrictions, it's okay. It's good. We just have to do a few more things before those can be put into place. But when we're done, the restrictions will be almost exactly the same as Park City.
Okay. And certainly fires don't really obey city or county lines. So I'm curious how the Park City Fire District works with other fire agencies in the area for, you know, prevention. Chief Lewis, maybe you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. And you know, before I go any further, I just have to shout out to Chief Owens and his team. There's a lot of coordination and communication within his division and the community, and he does an excellent job with that. We're very lucky to have him on our team. He's a valuable member of our team, and I think we're lucky to have him in our community helping to keep us safe. As far as our fire response goes, we like to help keep people remind them that we have 7 fire stations staffed with wildland firefighters. You may think fire station is structure only, we're only responding to homes and fires within homes, but no, we have staffed wildland firefighters that are trained and respond on wildland fires. Mm-hmm. So we're prepared and we're ready. And that extends to our neighbors in North Summit and South Summit. We train with them, and we're constantly communicating with those neighbors, and we also respond with each other. So when we have fires in Park City and North Summit Fire and South Summit Fire, responding in, and vice versa. And we also have tight coordination with state partners. Mm-hmm. And this is a group effort. And it takes a village to prepare communities for wildland fire, but it also takes a village of resources from around the state to fight wildland fire as well.
Yeah. How much will this snow help our fire year? If at all.
Well, in any bit of moisture is nice. Mm-hmm. It's going to make a difference. Probably not a big one. You know, when we look at our fire year, we typically look at about July-ish, we start to get into the spot where we get pretty nervous. Up to that, it's just preparation. The snow right now isn't going to make a huge difference just because of the way the weather has hit us over the past winter. Mm-hmm. We did get about the same amount of moisture as we typically get, but it came in the form of rain. The forecasts show about a little bit warmer summer than normal, and because of the way the rain acted rather than the snow would act, as we roll into July and into August, the severity of the fires, if we have a fire in during those times, the severity could be much higher. So that's really where our concern comes from, is not so much what's happening right now. Right now, we're still in that time of the year when we typically have snow on the ground, or, you know, maybe it's a little bit wetter. It's as we moved further on into the summer that we really start to get a little bit more concerned.
Yeah, so we can just hope for moisture later this summer.
Yes, I hate using that word hope, because that says that there's nothing in our power to there's nothing that we can do. When we talk about wildfire, we talk about risk, and risk is an equation made up of the probability of something happening versus the severity of what happens when it does happen. So when we talk about wildfire preparedness, really what we're trying to do is reduce that severity. You know, there's things we can do as humans to prevent a fire from happening. Make sure you're not dragging chains on your car. Make sure that if you have a campfire, it's out. You know, doing these things that we've been told time after time that we need to do. But then also we need to work on that severity side of things. If there is a wildland fire, how easy is it going to be to fight? You know, as homeowners are doing fuel reduction on their property, then that makes it so that the fire can't spread quite as fast. It allows us to use our resources a little bit more efficiently.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thank you for these reminders. Anything else you want to share with the community before I let you go?
You know, I just want to really throw out there, thank you so much to this community. We live in a very unique place, and the participation that we have, the way that the community reacts to this and the things that they're willing to do just completely blows my mind. The people here are just, I can't say it enough, they're absolutely amazing. I really appreciate all the work that they put into this wildfire preparedness. It results in a better likelihood of us being able to fight the fire. It's safer for our firefighters. And quite honestly, we have fewer fire starts because our community is just so aware of everything that's going on. So really good job to them.
And also, that I just want to leave that wildland firefighting is one of our highest priorities. We're ready, we're prepared. We're up staffing stations and with more people this year. Mm-hmm. And we're ready for what this summer brings.
It's good to hear. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We've been speaking with Mike Owens and Ashley Lewis of the Park City Fire District. The Utah Department of Public Safety is reminding drivers they face tickets and fines if they don't buckle up behind the wheel. Starting today, law enforcement agencies across the state will focus on seatbelt violations and stop, cite, and educate drivers. Utah DPS reports seatbelt use dropped below 90% in 2025. Seatbelts reduced the risk of fatal injuries in cars by 45%. Joining me here in the studio are the Park City Troublemakers. Good morning to you too.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting us to come.
Thank you so much for being here. So you have a couple of concerts coming up this month, I understand. The first one's America Sings. Could you share a little bit about what's on the program?
Yes, America Sings is in celebration of the semi-quincentennial of the United States. So we do have one patriotic medley, but for the most part, it's a collection of songs that represent kind of the history of the United States. So these are songs that perhaps, like for instance, we have folk songs, Broadway, early rock, spiritual and blues, songs that represent World War I, World War II. We have some modern Beach Boys, for instance, Billy Joel, Bruno Mars. And mentioning the two concerts that we have, this will be the first year that we've ever offered a spring salon concert. But in the past, our salon concerts have sold out, quite honestly. And we wanted to be able to accommodate more people and to offer something in the spring in the lines of a salon concert. So this will be the first time that we've offered that. And that's going to be this weekend. So May 23rd.
Yeah. What is a salon concert? I don't know that term.
Well, a salon concert is in a private home. So it's here in Park City. And we offer sparkling beverages. You can interpret that as you like. And we provide an appetizer buffet. So it's a very elegant concert. And very social. It's a lot of fun to mingle and so forth. And as I say, it's in this particular case, it's in a beautiful home.
Yeah.
Lovely Park City home. So it's always a kind of special event.
Mm-hmm. A very intimate way to enjoy music.
Precisely, yes. Yeah. Good way to put it.
So are tickets still available?
They are, yes. And those can be had with a reservation to Lynn
Griggs.
Lynn Griggs, thank you. Mm-hmm. And I do have her email address here, or probably easier to just remember to go to the website, and all the information is there as to, rather than having to memorize Lynn's email. So if they visit our website, that is parkcitytroublemakers.org. Mm-hmm. So pretty easy to remember. And if you just go there, we have all the information about the salon concert, as well as our community concert, which is on May 31st at Park City Community Church.
Nice. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Sure, yes. So as Renee mentioned, that's on Sunday the 31st. It's at 4 p.m., and that's at the community church. You can buy tickets in advance or at the door, and that is just open to the public, open to the community, and we'll be doing pretty much the same program as the salon concert, just a different setting. So we're hoping that people will be able to come to one or the other or both.
For yourself, which piece are you most excited to perform?
Well, it's interesting because, as Brene said, this is our concert is entitled America Sings, but my very favorite piece is Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, who is from our neighbor to the north. But we do love that piece, and it's just a gorgeous harmony, and so many Americans have covered it, so we just think it's kind of in the canon.
Yeah, yeah, that's lovely. It sounds like sometimes drawing a crowd for spring concerts can be a little bit more of a challenge than the big, Christmas events, holiday events. I'm curious how, what would you say about to people who maybe have never been to a Troublemakers event before, what should get them excited to come out and support?
Well, I would say that it's simply because we will be offering a different grouping of songs than our Christmas repertoire. Mm-hmm. And yes, Christmas does get people excited. Everyone loves hearing Christmas songs. But the truth is, we have so many beautiful songs all year round, and these are performed a cappella. And we're rather excited to share these with you, some things that perhaps people don't normally hear sung a cappella. We're all familiar with, like, let's say, Billy Joel's songs and Bruno Mars. We're familiar with those when they're sung with a full band behind them. But yes, they can be performed with just voices. Mm-hmm. We do have some percussion. I was just thinking about the Bruno Mars. That one is Count on Me, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. on Count on Me. And so we keep a rhythm going, two of our Jen Floor and Karen Bechtel both are, will keep us on our timing going well with percussion. So we do have a few little add-ons, but by and large, the voices provide virtually everything. So we are the instruments, essentially.
Yeah, that's very cool. How big of a group is the Troublemakers?
16 voices. Mm-hmm. So it's four per section. Mm-hmm. First soprano, second soprano, first alto, second alto.
Yeah.
And I should mention that Colleen Earnshaw directs our choir.
Very nice.
She's been doing this for a good long while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you audition to become members? How does that work?
Yes. It is an audition process. Additionally, because each group is just four members, even when we have an opening, mm-hmm. It's determined that what part needs to be filled. And once again, you can go to the website if you have interest in this. We do from time to time have someone that has to move on mm-hmm. to some other city or whatever. So we do like to keep a list of people that would be interested in performing with a women's a cappella ensemble.
Makes sense. Do you have a harder time finding altos or sopranos?
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't
that's probably
either.
A question for Colleen.
Yes, and you know, additionally, there are people that can perform in all four.
Yeah,
I am not one of those people.
Yeah. Kudos to them, though.
Nor am I, but we did actually have two of our members who switched parts when we had an opening in the first Sopranos. So we do have some versatility. But
some impressive range.
Yeah, but Renee and I are solidly stuck in our respective sections.
Yes. You know, I don't, excuse me, I don't really think that we have one section that is more difficult to fill than another, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that the main thing is that the voices need to blend. And so that's a big concern when Colleen does audition someone, is does it blend with the other voices that we have? So that's my answer. I don't really think one part more so than another, I would say, whether or not the voices blend.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of work and care will go into these concerts. Could you remind listeners one more time where they can find that information?
That would be on our website, which is parkcitytroublemakers.org.
Wonderful.
We are not trouble. We are treble.
Excellent.
And I should mention, too, that we will also be singing a few songs at the Memorial Day services at mm-hmm. the cemetery with the VFW. And we also will be at the Senior Center at in Heber, as well as the Park City Senior Center.
Okay, so you're really getting around the Wasatch back with your music.
We do. Yes. We do perform a few songs here and there, and those events, by and large, except for the Memorial Day, now that's mm-hmm. open to everyone, but mm-hmm. the other events are for the particular residents. Mm-hmm. But all of those will be found also on our website.
What do tickets typically cost?
I can answer that. The community concert on May 31st is $12 in advance and $15 at the door. Mm-hmm. Children younger than 12 is $10. And I should mention also that we do accept donations for Peace House at that concert. We do try at our community concerts to have some proceeds go to one of the local charity organizations. The Salon concert is $25, and that's paid in advance. And as Renee mentioned, parkcitytroublemakers.org is where all the information for both concerts can be found.
Awesome. Well, I hope both concerts are a success. Is there anything else you want to share with the community before I let you go?
I'll just say that we didn't have any snow at our Christmas concert, and we're hoping not to have any in our spring one, but we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we will. Well, thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you, Grace.
Thank you.
And joining me in the studio are Youth Sports Alliance, Emily Fisher and Heather Sims. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here. It's award season at YSA, it seems. I would love to hear a little bit about this year's Circle of Excellence Awards. First off, what is the Circle of Excellence?
Sure. So every year at the Youth Sports Alliance, we have our Circle of Excellence Awards. And this celebrates student athletes, after-school participants, coaches, volunteers, and community leaders. It's one of my favorite events of the year because instead of athletes being recognized just in front of their own club, we bring together our seven winter sport partner clubs and recognize athletes in front of the whole winter sport community. So it's a special event, and we really enjoy doing it every year.
Very nice. Could you tell me a little bit about the types of awards you give out and who some of the winners are?
Sure. So we give out a Champion Award, recognizes athletes receiving success or nationally, internationally. And then our All-Star Award honors athletes regionally who represent the top 5% within their club. This year, we also had the Spirit of Service Award, which went to Amy Masuga. She has been an unbelievable volunteer for us for, I think, a dozen years, supporting Jan's Winter Welcome, literally raising millions of dollars for YSA and the seven member clubs. We also have a Hall of Fame, and this year we inducted Steven Schumann, who is a Park City native, Nordic combined Olympian, and U.S. ski team athlete. And then one of our own staff members, Jana Johnson, she's a two-time Olympian in freestyle aerials. She was a longtime coach at Park City Ski and Snowboard, and she is our current YSA South Summit and North Summit program manager. And then we also have a leadership award, went to Austin Knight from the Figure Skating Club of Park City. Breakthrough performance of the year was Maddie and Matt Penafiel from, again, the Figure Skating Club of Park City. They won the U.S. Pairs Final Championship. And then our Sam Jackenthal Showstopper of the Year went to Mason Schwarzenbach from Park City Ski and Snowboard.
And that's connected with the Live Like Sam Foundation?
It is not, actually.
Oh, okay.
It is. So it started before Live Like Sam, right after Sam Jackenthal passed away. He was a longtime freestyle athlete and just had a great spirit. And so because he was part of one of our seven member clubs and an important athlete in our community, we started the Sam Jackenthal Showstopper of the Year Award, and we continue that tradition to honor his spirit and, you know, dedication to the community. All three of those awards, the Leadership Award, Breakthrough Performance of the Year, and Sam Jackenthal Showstopper, they get a $250 scholarship from the Stein Erickson Endowment Fund. So that is, those are our major awards at the event.
Well, congrats to all the winners. It sounds like the Activate Awards for middle and high school students.
Yeah, we also have a Get Out and Play Core Values Award winners and Activate Award winners. And basically we have the coaches and the chaperones identify students that are really going above and beyond and exemplifying those core values and award winners. And so they're recognized at that event as well. For the Activate Awards, they've completed eight different activities, including CPR training. So I also just want to say thank you to our sponsors for that event, Mountain Flow, Ritual Chocolate, Kodiak, Scott, and the Stein Erickson YSA Opportunity Endowment.
Very nice. Activate, it sounds like, has its 10th birthday. Could you share a little bit about why the program was created and how it works a little bit, Heather?
Yeah, so yes, we just completed our 10 years, and it was really created to give tweens and teens a positive outlet through sport, art, and other enrichment activities, as well as, you know, a social connection during a critical age when many kids just stop participating in activities. At the beginning, we thought it was going to be an older get out and play program or very similar. But when we talked to the kids, we really found out that that was really not what they wanted. They wanted other activities. So we do everything from paddleboarding to biathlon to rowing, rise boxing, so kind of older age sports. And activities, lifestyle activities include cooking and photography. And really, it was really about getting kids off the screens and doing something very positive.
Yeah, so it goes beyond just sports into all kinds of different things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, over the 10 years, we've really discovered kids have found different passions. They've joined the rowing club. They've learned how to cook for their family on a $8, you know, and so they've really learned different different passions over the years. And throughout the 10 years, we've actually had 3,153 students participate in our program. Mm-hmm. And those kids have basically gone on from our core values that we did with our Get Out and Play, and they've learned leadership and confidence and accountability and respect. Mm-hmm. They have to do, to get the core value award at the Circle of Excellence, they have to complete their first aid and CPR, and that makes them employable. It makes them, they can do babysitting, they can work for the local recreation departments. Mm-hmm. So we've moved on from the Get Out and Play, and really one of our goals is really to bridge that gap between recreation and lifelong healthy habits.
Yeah. What do you feel is maybe for you the number one thing that you hope teenagers take away from the program?
I think for me, it's really about discovering new activities, you know, whether it's mountain biking for the rest of their life, you know, learning something new, and friendships, getting that connection between their friends rather than being on the screens. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say, Emily?
Yeah, I would say that's really our biggest goal. And as Heather said, that's the age when athletes and students are really dropping out of sport. And so giving them an opportunity to try lots of different later entry sports in a short, bite-sized way so they can hopefully find something that they're passionate about and pursue that either just for a short time or for the rest of their lives. And that's really what we're hoping, is just to get kids involved in as many activities as possible.
Yeah, good to hear. Now we're wrapping up another school year. I'm curious to hear a bit of a snapshot of what this year has brought for YSA and what some of your biggest successes were.
Well, first of all, I think we've had our very biggest year ever. We had 3,800 kids, just shy of that, 3,793, in our programs on the Wasatch Front and on the Wasatch Back. So we moved into the Wasatch Front this year, and we serve all the districts from Ogden down to Alpine District. And we worked with 9 different resorts. It's been an amazing year. We, out of those 3,793, we actually had 921 full scholarships, ensuring cost was not a barrier for families. Mm-hmm. We had 260 discounts and 45 sibling tickets, and we couldn't have done that really without the sponsorship given by Kodiak. So we are very grateful to them. One of the biggest expenses is transportation. That is one thing that's unique to our programs, is that we provide the transportation from the schools to the venues. And we used 264 vehicles this year, which was a little crazy, but we really find that that is a barrier. And so removing that barrier allows kids to participate. And really, these programs are about much more than sports. They support physical health, mental well-being, confidence, social connection, and just a belonging. And finally, the continued growth shows families are looking for opportunities that help kids get active, connected, and engaged away from screens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a little bit more of an analog childhood is a big goal here.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. You could almost dust off your skis and take some kids out today.
Right. I know. It's a little crazy, but no, we're very grateful to the community, to all the venues we work with, you know, close to 80 venues, and we're very, very grateful to provide these opportunities for these kids in our communities.
Yeah. Any other highlights of the year you would add, Emily?
I would probably just echo Heather and just say, you know, in a winter that was very challenging, I think we only had to cancel like one or two sessions. The resorts did an incredible job of figuring out how to get all the kids on the mountain, how to have a great time when they were out there. I mean, if you're learning to ski, like sunny 50 degree days are pretty nice. So just a shout out to the resorts. And then finally, a shout out to Heather and her staff. I mean, 3,800 kids, almost 300 vehicles. Think about the spreadsheets, right? I mean, it is legendary, those spreadsheets that Heather has. And the ability to make that all happen really is due to the magic of Heather Sims and her staff.
Great to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's about all the time we have, but anything else you want to share with the community?
No, but if they want to find out more about YSA, they can, or Youth Sports Alliance, they can look at our website. It is ysausa.org.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Emily Fisher and Heather Sims, thank you both.
Thank you.
Well, Park City Recreation is in the house. Director Ken Fisher and Recreation Division Manager Heather Todd are here with me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Grace.
Thank you for being here.
Certainly.
Ken, I'd love to start with you and an update on Mark Construction. It's certainly not swimming weather right now, but tell me how the pools are shaping up.
Yeah, the pools are coming along, and I'll certainly let Heather chime in on this because she has really been a key teammate in getting the facilities built. So I'll just turn it over to her to give you the update.
Yes, yeah, so we were excited to see this weekend the slide went in. And so pools are moving along quickly. We are expecting to put water in this week. Hopeful the weather participates in that. But we are running on a schedule and ready to be open to the public June 6th.
Wow, June 6th. Is that a little bit earlier than was originally projected?
You know, actually, it's what our target was. We were hopeful to open the first day of summer, and so we're excited to say, yes, we've made it to June 6th.
Yeah, I hear there's also going to be a climbing wall in the pool now.
There is. So we've got something for everyone, I believe. There's a climbing wall for kids. There will be a basketball hoop. There's a large slide. There's a zero entry that has their own little kiddie slide in there. So I think that every age group will find something to discover at this pool.
That's awesome. What does zero entry mean?
Zero entry means that it's walk-in, so you don't step into the pool. So it goes from, you know, zero and then goes down to a depth of 18 inches in the kiddie area.
Okay, so more like wading into a lake or an ocean.
Like a beach area.
Yeah. Oh, really cool. Yeah. Will there be any kind of a celebration to open up the new pool?
Absolutely. So on the 6th, we are going to do a grand opening. The ribbon cutting will be about 11:30 when we're telling everyone to come. Mm-hmm. There will be a little quiet hour at 10:30 for those toddler parents for 3 and under that we're inviting them to come and to just have that zero entry open. But at 11:30 is the grand opening. We'll have food trucks. We'll have prizes, live DJ for the day.
Very nice. Are there more? I feel like often the renovations include more accessibility features, and I'm curious if that's a piece of this renovation as well.
Sure. I think that was part of the thought in having that zero entry. Mm-hmm. So it is rollable to come in. We'll, of course, have our ADA lifts in each of the pools. The hot tub now has a seated bench, so it's easy for transfer. So no need to get a lift. You can just transfer right out of your seat there. And, yeah, we hope that it is accessible to all of our users.
Very nice. Anything else you want to add about the aquatics overhaul?
We're just really excited to bring this to the community. We're going to open up with our full load of programs. Everything's open on the registration portal now. You can see we've got a bunch of new programs coming, mermaid parties, DJ parties, movie parties. So we're just excited to be open and party all summer.
Good way to kick off the summer weather. And across town, construction is well underway at the mine. Could you share a little bit about where we stand with that project?
Yeah, that project also is moving along quickly. You can see scaffolding when you go by on Deer Valley Drive, and that's where they are installing the brick exterior. They've started to frame the interior of the building and also working on the roofing. So we hope to have that building enclosed and the roofing done by the end of the month. And that is projected to be done sometime in November.
Oh, wow.
So that's about a month earlier than we originally had anticipated. So it's moving along, and that's super exciting.
Okay, so you're ahead of schedule. Where are we on budget?
Budgets also are on budget, or hopefully we'll on that project will end up below budget.
Okay.
So good news across the board on that end. I know that's not real newsworthy for you guys, for us to could deliver a project on time and on budget, but I think we're going to do that with both of our capital projects.
Certainly the goal with for the Recreation Division.
Yes.
Yeah. There are some trail impacts going on right now around the construction zone. Could you share an update with our listeners of what to look out for?
Yeah, so we have had to close the trail starting by the tennis courts all the way up to the skate park. Mm-hmm. And that trail will be closed until Friday, June 19th. And the reason for that is we are expanding the basketball court that was, you know, by the old building. It's going to be a little bit wider, a little bit bigger than the old court. And that just meant that we had to close that trail for them to get in there and build a little retaining wall in the footings. So that trail closure, I know, is can be challenging, mm-hmm. but we're really asking people to follow the signage. We're looping people out to Park Ave, mm-hmm. and then once you get up by Miners Hospital, you can cut back in and get on the trail. And the reason we're sending people out to Park Ave versus up Sullivan is that Park Ave has a sidewalk,
right.
and it also is striped with bike lanes,
okay.
whereas Sullivan through the road, through the park, is a construction zone with construction traffic, and there's no you know, dedicated access for pedestrians or bikers.
Yeah, so a little safer to route out to Park Avenue.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Very nice. It is biking season, mountain biking, road biking, all the kinds of biking. Could you share a little bit about anything new that listeners might want to look out for on the bicycle front?
Sure. We have a whole bunch of mountain biking programs, everything from MOB, which is Moms on Bikes, that Heather participates on. What's that, Wednesday mornings?
Wednesday mornings at 9 a.m.
And then we have all sorts of instructional clinics, and they include everything from skills clinics on cornering, jumps, drops, doing switchbacks, bike repair clinics. And then one of our favorite things that we run are we do these guided epic rides where we offer a shuttle and a guide. And the first one that we do will be on the WOW Trail. And those are always very well received and sell out. So I'd encourage people to get onto our website and sign up for those. And some other ones that we do is we do women's specific skills clinics as well.
Very nice. And are the bike tours beginner friendly? Maybe it depends on the route.
I'll let Heather answer that one.
Most of the epic bike rides are for intermediate mm-hmm. riders, but we do encourage people to kind of look into the trail themselves and, you know, ask questions if they're interested. But most of those are intermediate skilled trails.
Good to know.
And I think, sorry, I'll just chime in. I think if someone participated in our skills clinics mm-hmm. and went through those, I think the goal would be that they would be able to then join in on one of these epic rides.
Yes.
Very nice. Yeah, for people who might not be as into biking, are there other programs or activities that you would want to put on listeners' radars?
Oh, boy. I mean, we have a whole list of programming from all sorts of racket sports activities for pickleball and tennis, youth tennis camps, youth pickleball camps. We have our summer day camp mm-hmm. for kids. I mean, we have... I think I looked on there today, and there were 690-some-odd things you could register for on our website.
Oh, my goodness.
So we could be on here all day talking about each and every program. So there's a wide range of stuff for the community.
Well, instead of listing all, you know, hundreds of programs, should people go to your what is the website where people can learn more?
Yeah, the best is parkcityrecreation.org.
Wonderful.
And that will take you to our registration portal.
Awesome. Well, exciting stuff happening with recreation this summer. Is there anything else you two want to leave our listeners with before you go?
I'd just like to thank Heather mm-hmm. for the work that she's done with the pools. It's really been great. She's really been involved from day one and has done an exceptional job mm-hmm. With it. So super proud of the work that we've done and the project that we're going to turn over to the community.
Awesome.
Thanks, Ken. definitely a team effort on that one.
Absolutely. Well, we, listeners will keep an eye out for the grand opening of that pool this summer and many other good things. Thank you so thank you both so much for being here.
All right. Thanks Grace. Grace.
We've been speaking with the Park City Recreation Department. In other local news, Heber City will celebrate Public Works Week with free events starting today. The celebration opens with the city's annual Backhoe Rodeo at the Wasatch County Events Complex from 4 to 7 p.m. Participants from public works entities in the valley will compete and demonstrate their heavy equipment skills by navigating an obstacle course. Then Wednesday, there's a free party in the park for families to learn about the heavy equipment used by the department. That party is at South Field Park.